thanks. All right, can you hear me all right? Again, as with everyone, thanks to the organizers for putting together such a great meeting, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to tell you a bit about our research. Let me start off first by acknowledging my collaborators on this work. There's a few projects here. The first one I've done with Andrew Doherty at University of Queensland, and that's published here. The second thing I'm going to tell you about is in collaboration with Andrew and also Terry Rudolph from Imperial, Sean Barrett, who was at Imperial and is now in Sydney at Macquarie, but is going back to Imperial, and David Jennings, who was a postdoc at Sydney and is now a postdoc at Imperial. So I figure our research should be funded by Qantas, because we're keeping them in business at the moment. So this work is about measurement-based quantum computing from a theorist perspective. And we've heard a bit about measurement-based quantum computing or cluster state quantum computing in the first day, but let me just remind you a bit what it's about. We normally think of quantum computation as proceeding through unitary gates, sort of the evolution in Hilbert space proceeds via the Schrödinger equation with a measurement at the end. Well, measurement-based quantum computation uses a different approach of driving the dynamics. We're going to use local measurements on parts of our quantum system and drive the dynamics through wave function collapse. And there might be some systems in which this is easier to do these incoherent local measurements than to do a whole lot of coherent coupling between different systems. To make it work, though, you need to start with something other than a bunch of unentangled qubits. You need to start with a resource state, of which the cluster state is an example. It's a highly entangled state of many, many qubits. We think of this as this resource state as a bit like these breadboards we used in our early days in electronics, where at the beginning it has the potential to be any circuit, and then you wire up on that breadboard anything that you actually want to do. So the cluster state allows for any computation. We choose the computation we do through our choice of local measurements on that system. Okay, the reason I like this and theorists like this state is this way of looking at quantum computing is that it allows you to ask questions about what do I need to do quantum computing just in terms of questions about the state that you're going to start with, this resource state such as the cluster state. So one question you might ask is, what type of resource states allow for this? The cluster state is an example, but we don't actually have very many other examples. And so you could ask, well, what classes of states that are fundamentally different might allow for this, or which ones do not? You could ask, what types of physical systems are natural for producing these types of states? And finally, you would say, okay, well, given such a maybe a natural system, what are the relevant errors on that, and how robust is that state in terms of its usefulness for measurement-based quantum computing against those types of errors? So I'm going to be asking these questions today. And I'm going to be taking a perspective that's quite a bit different than what you would use in the linear optics approach to cluster state quantum computing. There we start with unentangled single photons, and we try to build up this entangled state. But another perspective you could look at, a lot of other systems which might be more natural for creating cluster states are strongly correlated systems where the natural states, maybe the ground states or thermal states of that system, are already very strongly correlated, highly entangled, and might be able to serve as resources for quantum computing. And if that were the case, well, the method to create the cluster state might be much easier than trying to build it up with a bunch of unitary gates. We might just have to cool that system down appropriately. So this might be the case in some engineered condensed matter systems, but also in some more exotic things in AMO physics that we've seen more recently. I've stolen a theorist's picture of an optical lattice where we can control the interactions between the atoms in that lattice. Or you might also think of the control system that Chris Monroe talked about in the first day in terms of ion traps and controlling the couplings between the ions there. Okay, so the approach we're going to take is, well, let's think of a system, a toy system, for which the ground state is the cluster state. And so I've written here an example of one, and this is the one we're going to keep in the back of our heads. It's not important for you to know the details, but this is a particularly easy Hamiltonian to solve. We can completely calculate its spectrum, prove that the ground state is a cluster state, and so on. It might not be very natural in spin systems, but, well, that's a whole other talk. I'd be glad to speak to you about how you could make this type of thing a bit more natural afterwards. Okay, so if you had a system, though, with the cluster state as the ground state, and you thought, okay, well, what kind of error model is most relevant? The first thing you probably wouldn't ask is, how robust is it to local uncorrelated Pauli errors? You might say, well, what if I didn't get my Hamiltonian just right? What if there were a bunch of other local terms in addition to that Hamiltonian that means I don't really exactly have that system, it's just sort of a model of it. Another thing you might say is, well, what happens if I can't get into the ground state? What happens if I'm at finite temperature? Low, but finite temperature. How useful is this state for measurement-based quantum computing? And you say, well, is this system fragile or robust against these local terms and against finite temperature? And you might take two different opinions on it, depending on how optimistic you are at the moment. One thing that might make you optimistic that things may be fairly robust is all of the things we've learned about condensed matter physics and phases. Well, think of superconductivity as an example. Now, there's a system where you're going to have a very complicated quantum state as the ground state, and we have a nice Hamiltonian for describing it, the BCS Hamiltonian. If you cool a system described by that Hamiltonian down near the ground state, you get a superconductor. Now, we know that the BCS Hamiltonian is just a model. There's going to be a bunch of extra terms in there, but we don't really care as long as we're in that phase that has the general features of that Hamiltonian. Then the system's going to be robust against all of those minor perturbations and finite temperature fluctuations and so on. So you might be optimistic, but you might also be very pessimistic, because unlike superconductivity, where you don't care what electron number 2,068,000,000 is doing, in a measurement-based quantum computation, you care very specifically what is the outcome of your 2,068,000,000 measurement, because you're going to base your next measurement on that outcome. So here it's very different from that type of thing, and you might not think that phases would have much to say about measurement-based quantum computing. So that's the starting point for a few different things I'm going to tell you about, and so let me begin with just a summary of some of the results we've seen looking at systems in this direction. We've taken this toy system with this cluster Hamiltonian, and we've put on a simple perturbation, a local uniform magnetic field in the x direction. And we said, well, let's look at the ground state properties of that system, and what we find, in fact, is that there's a robust phase at zero temperature up to a finite strength of magnetic field. And in addition, if you look at, well, what type of order are you seeing in that phase, we see that we see the type of order that's actually allowing us to do the quantum gates. It's allowing us to teleport quantum information from one location to another, and it's allowing us to do gate teleportation, to do a local unitary, or to do a cosine operation, and so on. That's the type of order that's in this phase. Any state within that phase can do these types of gates. So that's a very promising result. We looked at another model where we put on, again, a uniform field, but now in a z direction. And in this model, it's so simple, we've solved it, and it's got no phase transitions at all, either in terms of the magnetic field or in terms of the temperature. But nonetheless, we've shown that there's two regions, one down at low field and low temperature where you can do measurement-based quantum computing, and another at high temperature and high magnetic field where you can actually classically simulate the results. So there's some sort of transition going on there, and it's power as a resource despite the fact that there's no phase transition in the model. And I doubt I'll be able to even mention this last result, but we have some recent work that connects this in a bit to renormalization. Maybe if I have 1 minute at the end, I'll mention that. Okay, so let me start off by telling you a bit about that first result and how we got it. So I don't want to go into a lot of details, but I want you to keep in mind this idea that we have a model cluster Hamiltonian with the cluster state as its ground state, and then we put on this local magnetic field in the x direction. And what happens? Well, Normally, these types of models are hard to solve exactly, and certainly they're hard for me who has no experience in this field, but one trick you can try to do is say, well, let's take this model and let's transform it to a known model. And so we came up with some transformations that take this to a known model that someone else has solved completely. In one dimension, this is just on a line, not universal for quantum computation, but a good starting point. We take this model, we're going to do a non-local unitary transformation. The state we transform to is not, we're not going to look at it from its measurement-based quantum computing properties, but we're going to look at its phases and so on and learn something about the original model. So we break up this line of qubits into red and blue qubits and transform them differently. The details aren't so important. The key is that we transform this model to a pair of transverse field Ising models. And we know everything there's to know about the transverse field Ising model at zero temperature. There's a phase going up to B equals 1, and then you go into a completely different type of ground state, a completely different phase. We can do this type of thing in 2D. It's slightly more complicated. We came up with these 2D transformations based on what we learned about the 1D one. And we get two models that look like this. And here you might need to know a bit more about condensed matter physics to recognize that model, but it's been fairly well studied in the last 10 years, something called the anisotropic quantum compass model. It also has a phase identified for the strength of that magnetic field less than or equal to 1. It has Ising-like correlation functions like the top one, but also some additional correlation functions. So we've shown that our model has a phase, but we get something more than just that by looking at these other models. We can take correlation functions that characterize that phase, map it back to our model, and say, what do they look like? And here's the real surprise in the end, I guess, is that they look like the type of things that characterize the fidelity of your quantum gates in measurement-based quantum computing. You get these Ising-type correlation functions along lines, and if I take pairs of them along these two different models, red and blue, I find correlations that completely quantify my ability to teleport quantum information over long range. And in addition, in this 2D model, I can find more complicated correlation functions that precisely quantify my ability to do the C-sine gate. So not only have we identified this phase, but we've showed that the right order parameters to describe that phase are in fact your gates for measurement-based quantum computing. Okay. So that's our first result. We've identified a model that has these phases. I should be careful with the word universal here because we haven't proved universality with these gates. They perform at arbitrary ranges but with lower fidelity than the ideal gates. But we have these phases where in every state in that ground state, no matter what the magnetic field, is similar in its properties to the cluster state, similar in its long-range properties and an ability to do long-range gates as quantified by these types of string order. Okay. All right, for the second part, we looked at the model with a local Z field instead of a local X field. It turns out that this model is, in fact, trivially solvable, and it's unitarily related to a bunch of uncoupled qubits. There's no phase transition for any magnetic field. There's no phase transition at any temperature. So it's why we, at first, almost ignored this model because we thought it would be quite boring. But we came back to it, and 2 minutes? 3 minutes. Okay, thanks. We came back to it and decided to take a close look at what are the properties of this state for measurement-based quantum computing. So here we have a plot of the parameter state space. Here's zero local field all the way up to infinite local field here. And here's temperature on a log scale. And what we've shown is that we have a region where every state, every thermal state is every measurement-based quantum computation on that thermal state is efficiently simulatable on a classical computer. And down here we have a region, I won't go into the details of these two, but we have a finite region down here where the state is universal for measurement-based quantum computation given per measurements. Okay, so just very quickly some details on how we obtain these two results. This classical simulation, we have a thermal state. We want to simulate it. You say, well, you just told me you can solve this state exactly. So what do you mean by simulate it? Well, I have to be able to say, I'm going to do a local measurement, figure out what the state is, then do another local measurement, figure out what the updated state is. And on a cluster state, for example, we can exactly solve this model with a cluster state, but that requires keeping track of 2 to the n coefficients, and that's impossible on a classical computer. How do we do this on a classical computer at higher temperature? Well, we want to look at the thermal state, and we want to draw states from an ensemble that reproduce that thermal state. We're going to choose a very particular ensemble. We're going to use this valence bond solid, or PEPS, description of the cluster state that works at zero temperature. And in fact, we can generalize that to higher temperature and non-zero field just by, instead of putting maximally entangled states on these bonds, we put on some mixed states with some entanglement. And we're going to choose a decomposition where, in selecting samples of pure states out of our thermal state, we're going to pick either an entangled state or a separable state on each bond according to those weighted probabilities. And when we do so, we find a particular pure state instance might look like this. We can use some results of percolation to say, at high enough temperature, the probability that a bond is entangled is low enough that we're going to have only small regions, small clusters, out in this enormous state. And we can simulate measurements on those small clusters efficiently, provided they're small enough. That's how we get that top bound. I guess I really don't have time to get into this bound below here, except that a local filtering operation, which is a weak measurement on all our qubits, can be used. If we get this outcome, we knock the qubit out, and we just reset it into the zero state. We're going to say we're going to ignore that. If we get this outcome, though, it in a sense corrects for that magnetic field and adjusts the local state somewhat. And if we do this measurement everywhere, we end up with a lattice with a bunch of holes we punched in it where we didn't get that good result, but where we did get the good result, it's going to be a perfect cluster state. We can use some fault-tolerant thresholds of Rausendorf and his collaborators to show that this works even at finite temperature, and we can provide this finite region down here, don't worry about which one it is, to show that we can do universal quantum computation down in this region. Classically simulatable up there, universal down there. Obviously, something's going on in between, and yet there's no phase transitions in this model. So I guess the lessons to be learned from this one is you might think that this order is destroyed, this type of order we saw in the top example when we look at this second example, but in fact, this local filtering can, in a sense, tell you what's gone wrong, tell you what's still good, and we can find that order still hidden in that state somewhere that, and I guess maybe you could loosely say, is giving you a phase post-processing. And it's probably a good place to stop. So thank you very much.